It was conditional. The Apostle John literally saw the kingdom of God come in its fullness, which can't be discounted. And this was a taste as well. And let's read about this taste, the transfiguration. Verse 28, and it came to pass about an 8 days after these sayings, he took Peter and John and James and went up into a mountain to pray. And as he prayed, the fashion of his countenance was altered, and his raiment was white and glistering. And behold, there talked with him two men, which were Moses and Elias, who appeared in glory and spake of his decease, which he should accomplish at Jerusalem. But Peter and they that were with him were heavy with sleep, and when they were awake, they saw his glory, and the two men that stood with him. And it came to pass, as they departed from him, Peter said unto Jesus, Master, it is good for us to be here, and let us make three tabernacles, one for thee, and one for Moses, and one for Elias, not knowing what he said. While he thus spake, there came a cloud and overshadowed them, and they feared as they entered into the cloud. And there came a voice out of the cloud, saying, This is my beloved Son, hear him. And when the voice was passed, Jesus was found alone. And they kept it close and told no man in those days of any of those things. And when the voice was passed, Jesus was found alone, and they kept it close and told no man in those days of any of those things which they had seen. In the other Gospels, the account is given in less detail, and that explains the differences in the account. There's not a real contradiction here between the accounts as much as one account does not have the full details the other one does, such as the fact of the disciples being heavy with sleep. It doesn't say they were actually asleep. And in the other accounts, it seems like they just get up there and they see it. You know, Jesus took us up into a mountain, and he was transfigured before us. You could say that, and it's absolutely true. But then if you say, well, he took us up into a mountain, he was praying, and we were falling asleep, and then he was transfigured, and we saw him. And so it's very likely that the event of transfiguration probably jerked them out from their nearly asleep state. This word, glistering, it means to shine or glitter. It's from the Anglo-Saxon glycian. But it means lighting forth. It's from internal light. You know, he had light coming out of him. So I think we can readily sort of get that idea. Reminds me of the book of Habakkuk when it says he had horns coming out of his hand, which meant to me the like shafts of light. Because the word horns, it was like something emanating from something. Something that came out and was a projection. A projection from his hand. There was projections coming out of his hand. Imagine like emanations of power and light. And here Moses and Elijah finally appear in glory. And they speak about him, about what's going on in Jerusalem. And people say, well, how do you explain that, Paul? Well, like I said, things said in doctrine, we know that the dead are in their graves. And we know that no man has ascended into heaven, but he that came down from heaven. And these things are spoken, trying to teach us about who goes to heaven and about where the dead are. The passages that teach us about where the dead are one thing. But this is a narrative of Christ's transfiguration and of the kingdom of God. And so in the kingdom of God, I can only assume that this represents resurrection. That they are, as in the kingdom, they are resurrected and Jesus is transformed. And that's really all it can mean. Because the teaching is clear. This is not a passage trying to teach us, look, Moses and Elijah came down from heaven. They appear with him in glory. Just poof, out of nowhere. It certainly doesn't give us any idea that they came from heaven. And while they're talking, there came a cloud and overshadowed them, and they feared as they entered into the cloud. And this voice comes out of the cloud. And Christ isn't playing ventriloquist here. There is a distinction between the Father and the Son. If you ever needed to see it, here it is. If God didn't want to make some sort of idea of a distinction, things would be different. And if there is no distinction between the Father and the Son, if they are one and the same, if God is just one God in three offices, he's just occupying different jobs, then the way that this is done is awfully deceiving. And I choose rather to accept the way that God portrays himself to man as being an indication of what reality is. And so that's what I go on. And I think that's a very reasonable way to go. Other people, in denial of many scriptures, like to say that Jesus and the Father are one and the same. Other people like to say they're absolutely distinct, meaning that they are not both God, that Jesus is not one with the Father in the sense of that they are both God, but he is one with the Father in the sense of just a oneness of purpose, the way we are one, but that he is an angel or some other entity and not God. But he is God. And he is distinct from God. He is the image of the invisible God. And God himself calls him God. It says in the book of Hebrews, you can read about it. When he quotes the psalm, he says, "Thy throne, O God." To the Son, he says, "Thy throne, O God." God calls the Son God. Therefore, we can have testimony from no more authoritative source. And so they keep these things close. They don't talk about this. Not at that time. Verse 37. And it came to pass that on the next day, when they were come down from the hill, much people met him. And behold, a man of the company cried out, saying, "Master, I beseech thee, look upon my son, for he is my only child. And lo, a spirit taketh him, and he suddenly crieth out, and it teareth him, that he foameth again, and bruising him hardly departeth from him. And I besought thy disciples to cast him out, and they could not." And Jesus answering said, "O faithless and perverse generation, how long shall I be with you and suffer you? Bring thy son hither." And as he was yet a coming, the devil threw him down and tare him. And Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit and healed the child and delivered him again to his father. And they were all amazed at the mighty power of God. But while they wondered, every one, at all these things which Jesus did, he said to his disciples, "Let these sayings sink down into your ears, for the Son of Man shall be delivered to the hands of men." But they understood not this saying, and it was hid from them, that they perceived it not, and they feared to ask him of that saying. So here's the devil too hard for them to cast out. And Jesus is harsh with them, saying, "You faithless and perverse generation." In another place, he had said in a similar circumstance, if not the same, that this kind goeth, they asked him why they couldn't cast a particular devil out. I don't know if it is the same one, but he said it was because this kind goeth not forth but by prayer and fasting. And I really don't have a lot to say about it because I don't particularly understand, except that things go forth by faith. And sometimes by faith we have to do more things. We should know that we can cast the devil out.